So please welcome Barbara and her helping sister, Jody Knox.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here and see you all. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
All right. Dr. Eric Christian, 1858 to 1932. He is a dual veterinarian and visionary in the early development of the American Korean Draft Force. If there's one thing you take away from today's presentation, I would like it to be that Jules veterinarian, Dr. Eric Christian, was right. Cat leggings, mares, great-looking foals were unusual. Old Granny and her babies were something unique. They were actually a whole new draft horse breed. Everybody knew Hat Lakin, the stock fryer born and raised in Lakin Grove, as one of Luther and Emily Staples Lakin's 15 children. I hope he's on the screen.
It's not technical difficulty.
All right, we'll wait till we get Hat's picture. This is Nancy, by the way, my partner in crime. And this is Dr. Christian with his favorite dog. There's a funny story about this dog. Eric Christian sold that dog many times, and it ran home every time. It was a favorite of the family. And the person on the far right is Hat. I had never seen a picture of him, and I was delighted to find one. Hat's parents had moved to Hamilton County in 1854, about 2 weeks before his grandfather, Elisha Lakin, former resident of King County and DeKalb County, Illinois, arrived here with 100 head of cattle and horses. All right, on that map, which is also reproduced here for you, the purple area is where in Lakin's Grove, the Lakin homestead existed. The green areas are where Hans Nelson, Hat Lakin's neighbor, had several farms. So in the purple farm, the Lakin farm, that's where the first horse on the draft horse registry, Old Granny, pastured. And when Hat sold Old Granny to Hans Nelson, Old Granny then was in the green pastures on the map. And then, after that, Dr. Christian and my grandfather, Charlie Knox, with Dr. Christian in Jewell, Iowa, in town, and my grandfather in Red Farm, east of Jewell, got in the cream horse business. So, keeping the map in mind, when Hat Lakin died in 1942, his obituary said, "The Lakin family has always been closely identified with Ellsworth, and each of the boys who remained here has been a power in the community. Harry was no exception. Strong in his convictions and quick to speak, he was an advisor to many who sought the honors of the town and the county." And everybody driving east out of Jewell would have seen Old Granny out in Hat's pasture, sleek and richly champagne colored, with her white mane and tail, her amber colored eyes, her pink skin, accompanied every 2 or 3 years by her latest matching foal. Hat had purchased her over in Story County at a farm auction back in 1911. And you see that Hat is number one by the date 1911. So this is a genealogy of the horses that's up on the screen. Eventually, he sold her to his neighbor to the west, Hans Nelson, and his sons, the Nelson brothers, sometime before 1919. And they bred gray and then black Percheron draft horses. Sure enough, in 1920, following a cross with their black Percheron stallion, Old Granny and her next matching champagne-colored foal were out there in the Nelson's pastures, just east of Jewell. According to the American Cream Grafters Association, known as the ACDHA, Eric Christian is known to have persuaded the Nelsons to keep that colt, Nelson's Buck. Number two. As a stallion, and they did, but only for about a year, during which Nelson's Buck sired a cream colt in 1923 called Yancey, sired by Nelson's Buck crossed with one of the Nelson's black Percheron mares. If I had photos of the Nelsons or these horses, I would share them. I'm looking for them. Help me if you can. These are the clues that we have that from 1911, with Hat Lakin's purchase of Old Granny, to 1923, when the cream horse Yancey foaled at the Nelsons, Eric Christian, the jewel veterinarian, had been paying attention to it all. Because in 1925, just as Yancey turned two, Eric went after arranging for a cream foal sired by that stallion. And he had been noticing these horses for 14 years. So this was a open glacial development in the neighborhood. You wouldn't notice it at first, but no matter what Old Granny was crossed with, those little colts that looked just like her were her coloring, and they looked just like the mare. That was unusual. Eric had horse sense, and there were several sides to Eric's horse sense, for each of which he was well known. First, way back in 1886, when he left Kendall County, Illinois, and came to Iowa at the age of 28, and married Fanny Garrison in Radcliffe in 1888, he was 30, she was 19, and ran trotter horse races on his private track 3 miles north of Radcliffe. Eric had an eye for running his own horses and winning purses. Can you see photo C there where Radcliffe is at the bottom and the racetrack is up above? He had a farm in section 9, which is just above that red square, and the track and farmland south of it in section 16. Well, by 1893, when he was a family man with two young daughters, local newspapers were calling men, women, and children to attend his track matinees. And this is an example in 1895 of what was in the paper about Eric's self-promoting his track. Eric Christian writes down from Radcliffe that there is to be a racing matinee at his track 2 miles northeast of Radcliffe, commencing at 10 o'clock Thursday, June 6th. Some splendid races will be open, such as a yearling, a two-year-old, a three-year-old, and a free-for-all trotting match, besides numerous running and pony races. Radcliffe's splendid military band is to furnish the music. Good eating houses will be on the grounds, and a general good time will be had. Let all of our citizens interested attend, as we are to have one in Roland before long, and we will need support from Radcliffe horsemen. Besides, they did well by us last fall. Everybody go and have a day of sport. After the track, Eric's second horse sense part of his life was when he parlayed what he knew commercially and moved and established a livery and feed store in Ellsworth in 1897. As a businessman owning a town establishment, he did something else. He became equally well-known then, growing his reputation as an auctioneer. Eric ran ads in Ellsworth newspapers for years that always said 15 years experience. And the third side of Eric's horse sense continued in 1902 when he and Fanny and their daughter Cleo moved to Jewell, where he lived for the next 30 years, which was for the rest of his life. Because it was in Jewell in 1905 that Eric lived and advertised as a veterinary surgeon and dentist. Well, Dr. Eric Christian was well known regionally as an old-time veterinarian who traveled a wide area and had success when others didn't, such as in this newspaper item from 1907. On Saturday last week, Dr. E. Christian, the capable veterinarian, performed an operation on a horse at Story City that was of a really remarkable nature. The operation included the removal of a piece of flesh from the animal's hip, 28 inches long and 18 inches wide, and weighing about 50 pounds. The animal belonged to P.A. Peterson, near Story City, was a 5-year-old horse, and with the exception of a huge tumor on the hip, was a valuable animal. Several unsuccessful operations had been performed and treatment had been given at the college at Ames before Dr. Christian was called. 26 minutes of time were consumed in performing the operation, and from every appearance, a successful operation resulted. Well, 8 years later, in 1915, when Eric reported on the Iowa State Census card that he had property worth $2,500 and earned $1,200 the prior year, it still isn't clear what the extent of his training and education might have been when he said he was a veterinarian in Jewell. He indicated that his education in 1915 had included 4 years of common education, and then where grammar and high school and college was supposed to be filled in with information, there are just dashes. Yet earlier, in 1910, the Nevada Representative newspaper said, Eric Christian of Jewell, the noted veterinary surgeon, has been practicing his profession here the past week. Was he really so capable he simply declared himself a vet? Weekly news reports of Eric's professional caller visits like that were, for years, in Hamilton, Hardin, and Story County, and continued. This is the Eric Christian who was right about old Granny and the possibility of a new draft horse breed. The Eric who, as Jewell's veterinarian, had been paying attention. He was 53 when Hat Lake and bought old Granny in 1911. It was with his whole life experience that he noticed old Granny's matching foals in the pastures east of Jewell for many years after that. When the Nelsons bought old Granny and crossed her with their Percherons, it was with experienced foresight that Eric asked the Nelsons to keep Nelson's Buck a breeding stallion in 1920. It was Eric, the great horse lover, who noticed when the foals sired by Nelson's Buck arrived in 1923, and when that cream horse was sold to John and Jesse Lakin on the Lakin farm. By 1923, John and Jesse Yancey had been farming the Luther Lakin homestead place for 4 years because Jesse's father, Fred Lakin, was on the far left of that picture. That's Fred, Jesse's dad, Pat's brother, was a stock buyer residing in Ellsworth like his brother Hat, and he had purchased the Luther Lakin home farm over here in purple, the map I showed you before. He had purchased that home farm in an estate sale following their mother Emily Staple Lakin's death in 1918. And he asked his brother-in-law, his son-in-law John, and his daughter Jessie Lakin to farm it when he took possession in March of 1920. There's Fred working in Ellsworth. Well, by 1925, when John Yancey's stallion turned two, the stallion called Yancey number three on the ACBHA registry, Eric Christian made a deal with a fellow named Hans Burgesson here in Jewell and John and Jesse Lakin, Yancey, to try for a cream foal sired by that direct descendant of old Granny. The deal was that Eric would pay Hans Burgesson for his mare to be crossed with Yancey number three, and he, Eric, would pay to own the foal. Now, this was Eric acting on developing the new breed, the breed he had talked so much about. He's the one who made the arrangements for Hans Burgesson to breed his light bay mare to the Yancey's cream stallion, with the feature of prior agreement being that Eric would pay the fees and own the 1926 foal. Now, Eric knew that his vision for the future of this hoped-for cream foal in 1926 would take some time. The process was known then as fixing the genes by line breeding and inbreeding horses for several generations to establish desired traits. What he didn't know when he began making these arrangements in 1925 with the Bergensons and the Yanceys was that at his age then of 67, he only had 7 more years to live. Before I focus on the impact of Dr. Christian's vision with these horses and what that vision had on the development of the American cream draft horse with this foal in 1926, the foal he called Eureka, I'd like to mention that Eric wasn't perfect. He and Fanny were scathingly pilloried in the Webster City Journal in 1910, a month before their divorce was granted. And I'll read you the article. Hard on hubby, Ellsworth News. Eric Christian of Jewell has asked for a legal separation from his wife, Fanny Christian, on the grounds of cruel and inhuman treatment. It is no more than right that he should have it. Eric is a horse doctor, and we have heard of times that he could come home all fixed up with horse medicine, and his wife, who promised to obey him, wouldn't get out of bed to get him to supper. If that isn't cruelty to animals, we would like another guest at the same price. Why, actually, we have heard of times when Mrs. Christian wouldn't give him a half dollar to go out and get a pint of roof varnish when the tar-covered roof of his mouth was so dry that his grandmother over in South Africa could hear it tingle. If that isn't inhuman treatment, we'll go out in the backyard and pull a knot hole out of a $10 bill. Why, it's just shameful the way Eric has been mistreated. Sometimes he didn't miss being treated and misused. By all means, let him be granted a divorce. A man whose very life of his association with a lady who cannot afford to furnish him with the elixir of the rapid hereafter, and who refuses to get meals at all hours of the day and night, should be taught a lesson. Let this be a lesson to other ladies who enjoy the company of like husbands. The following year, on September 19th, after the divorce was granted, Eric and John McDonald were arrested on a charge of public intoxication in Jewell, and the charges were dismissed. But 3 weeks later, on October 9th, when bills for the costs in the case called Town of Jewell versus Eric Christian were taxed to the town, because the defendant only paid those expenses if they were convicted, one councilman protested payments, saying that when the mayor gave greater weight to the testimony of certain men whose testimony could not be considered reliable and unprejudiced, who had testified that the defendant was not drunk, and acquitted the defendant and forced the town to pay these costs, the mayor had not done his duty. Well, the mayor then explained that there had been considerable preponderance in number of witnesses testifying at the trial that the defendant was not guilty, and that he, the mayor, had absolutely disregarded trial testimony given by the councilman, influenced by his, the mayor's, own belief that the councilman's reputation and character were such that no credence could be given to his testimony. The councilman forthwith tendered his resignation. So news coverage continued. During that week of the council resignation story, it was reported that Dr. Eric Christian had gone to South Dakota to register in the government homestead land drawing. And it was also reported that Fanny was on a trip to Montana, where she was marrying the well-known and successful Ellsworth businessman, Emery Elisha Anderson. There's Emery in top hat with his, go back one, with his horse and his plumbing buggy, because he ran a hardware store. And he was a big town rooster. And he was younger than Eric, for Fanny. Well, Emery's mother was a sister of Hatton Fred Lincoln, Elizabeth Lincoln. And Emory was thereby Jesse Lincoln Yancey's cousin. And Fanny's remarriage announcement was in local print a little more than a week after the councilman resignation. And less than 2 weeks after that, it was reported that Eric and J.T. McDonald left on a trip to Kansas City on October 30th. So the divorce and all this drama and upheaval and life change around Eric in 1910 and 1911 happened after a terrible tragedy in 1908. Eric and Fanny's daughter, Cleo, and I just received this photo last week. I'm not sure if this is Cleo or which girl is Cleo, but I have reason to believe that one of those two girls is Cleo. And I think, some 50% of the time, I think Cleo's on the right because she sort of looks like Eric. Eric and Fanny's daughter, Cleo, had just graduated from Jewell High School in May of 1907, turned 18 in July, and contracted tuberculosis in April the next spring. She died 3 months later. It was in July 1908, shortly after her 19th birthday, and it was said at her funeral that Cleo's unusual popularity and the high regard and esteem in which she was held by everyone was evidenced by the vast crowd that filled the church, overflowing out on the lawn and into the street. Her pallbearers were six girls, perhaps these six girls. Thank you, Jody. These girls were with the photo of the two unlabeled girls that might be Cleo. This was with that photo in an album from her Jewell High School class. The remains were laid at rest in the cemetery at Radcliffe beside the body of another child of Mr. and Mrs. Christian's who had died in infancy. That other child was Addie Christian, still 2 years old when she died of cholera in 1895 on August 6th, when Christians lived near Radcliffe and had the racetrack. Eric's reaction the day after she died was to be quoted in the paper as saying he was done and he'd sold the farm. After the tragedy of Cleo's death in July of 1908, echoing Addie's 13 years before, Eric's marriage didn't survive. His life fell apart. There was drinking, there was a divorce, and there was drama that followed Eric for some time. I'm mentioning Eric wasn't perfect and a tragedy in his life before showing you the impact of what he accomplished because he went forward with his vision for developing a new draft horse breed in 1925 with that first cream foal, Eureka, in 1926. Because it can get in the way of appreciating what he achieved at the very end of his life. As does underestimating whether or not taking bold steps in 1925 at the age of 67 to build a new uniquely American draft horse breed was a smart thing for him to do. Whether it was notable then, whether it's even worth celebrating today, July 11th is newly declared National American Cream Draft Horse Day by the ACDHA. And in the 1940s, the ACDHA regarded Jewell's Dr. Christian as very important in the early development of the breed. But for all his horse sense, was he really someone to be admired? And wasn't he a little clueless, making breeding arrangements for Eureka back in 1925 when horses were on the way out? I mean, mechanization was well underway, and tractors won. Car production, for example, had jumped from 11,000 Model Ts in Ford's first year of production in 1903 to 20 million Model Ts produced in 1923. The car was on the way up, and the tractor had already pushed draft horses out of agriculture, right? Well, in 1925, that wasn't quite true. For the previous 50 years, Iowa had led the way in breeding, raising, and selling draft horses, becoming the top state for draft horse production by 1900. Percherons and Belgians and Shires were particularly popular, prized for their size and ability to work. Draft horses were literally used everywhere for anything requiring horsepower. In the peak years of 1910 to 1915, there were at least 1.5 million horses on Iowa farms, worth an average of $120 a head. The number of horses on American farms kept growing, reaching an all-time peak nationally of 25 million in 1920. While cars were quickly replacing horses on American roads, and yes, the shift from horsepower to tractor power in rural life seemed inevitable. But it was controversial for quite a long time whether or not tractors were going to completely replace draft horses on farms. In 1925, the Webster City Freeman Journal said, "The tractor has come to stay, but the draft horse will be here for a long time because tractors cannot wholly replace him." And the Hamilton County Census in 1925 recorded that year that of their 2,171 farmers in the county, only 611 owned tractors. 1925. So, yes, we know mechanization prevailed, the cars prevailed, the tractors prevailed, but it wasn't until 1945 that more hours of horsepower were provided by tractors than by horses nationwide for the first time. And that's a full 20 years after Eric Christian decided to try for a new draft horse breed. This is my Aunt Gladys, and that's her father standing in the center. He's using mechanization power with horsepower because those two horses are his cream Billy Boy and Maud, and that's my dad over on the far right, using both in 1944. When I know Eric Christian wasn't perfect, it's not to say Eric was hapless. Eric Christian's interest in making arrangements to own a cream foal was not a drunken fumble. It was not an eccentric misstep, oblivious to which way the economic winds were blowing. In 1925, Eric Christian's action was a conscious, shrewd, informed decision consistent with other gambles and decisions he had made where horses were concerned during his life as a self-made man. And it is the context in which I say Eric Christian was right about old Granny and her foals as a possible new draft horse breed, aware of the potential of that breed to fit the changing times. After Eureka foaled in 1926, 3 years went by during which Eric kept working as a veterinarian. That's because he didn't actually retire until he was 74 years old in 1932. And it was only 3 months later that he died after he retired. But from 1926 through 1929, Eric kept working, and he was also in the local papers again, but as a more grandfatherly town citizen. For example, he challenged Marshalltown, Lorenz, and Des Moines claims to the Iowa state record for the largest ear of corn in Iowa. He had an ear of corn that he grew in his garden that had 1,456 kernels. There were 28 rows with 52 kernels in the row. Unfortunately, he came in second. Oral Thorne, living near Indianola, beat that number by 8 kernels. Eric was in the paper. Eric's St. Bernard dog, Myrtle, made the newspaper when she had 15 puppies and 12 of them were boys. And there's Eric. There's Eric greeting the Custer Battlefield Highway representative in Jewell, visiting Jewell sometime after the advent of that auto route opening in 1925. According to the Library of Congress and the World Digital Library, the establishment of the Custer Battlefield Highway came at a time of widespread enthusiasm for highway construction, and the route quickly became one of the most famous of its era. It was based mostly on existing roads, but it served to add new historical signage and upgrade maintenance and build new bridges to improve the route for all those cars. And in this photo, Eric's shoes are shine and his elder presence is pro-jewel. So besides working and these examples of Eric's grandfatherly lifestyle, other newspaper items that toward the end of his life document Eric's social interactions with his Central Iowa American-Norwegian extended family. Eric's parents and his grandparents emigrated together in 1847 from Norway to Lisbon, Big Grove Township, Kendall County, Illinois. And as Arlen Tweet recently documented extensively in his three-volume history called The Central Iowa Norwegians, Lisbon, Illinois is about 60 miles southwest of Chicago. And it was the original settlement area for many of the early Norwegian immigrants who later settled in Central Iowa. They went to Illinois, then they went to Iowa. Here. When some of Eric's family left Illinois for land available in Iowa, they were part of this second migration, one that established two large settlement areas on open Iowa prairie. The two centers were southwest of Cambridge and east of Story City. And over 25 years, there were 6,500 people in Story County spreading into the contiguous areas of Hamilton and Hardin counties to the north and Polk County to the south, where there were no people. So after arriving in 1847, Eric's father didn't leave Campbell County with this ongoing wave of Norwegians getting land in Iowa, nor did his father's sister Elizabeth. But Eric's father's brother John went to Roland in 1857. His father's brother Charles went to Story County and Roland in 1865. Their widowed mother, Eric's grandmother, went after 1868, and his father's brother Ole was farming in Story County by 1885. They all prospered in Iowa. Their descendants are around here today. After Eric's youngest brother, Randall, was born in 1870, but before Eric's father, Christian Christensen, died in 1890, Eric went from Illinois to Iowa in 1886, as I said before, when he was 28 years old. He had been baptized and confirmed in the Lutheran faith at nearby Helmer, Illinois. He had worked on the family farm, threshing. It's Eric with his brothers, the farm threshing scene. He had grown up as the middle, and that's Eric, little inset of Eric. He had grown up as the middle child of seven children, six boys and one girl. That's Eric, still in Illinois. Roland, Iowa, and Kendall County, Illinois are often mentioned from 1888 on as Eric's destination for family visits, or as the places Eric's visitors in Jewel came from. When Arlen Tweet estimates that there were 12,000 American Norwegians living in these Central Iowa settlement areas, it was by 1905 that number was reached. And that number includes Eric, his cousins, their parents, and his cousins' children's families. This photo of Eric was possibly taken back in Illinois after his sister Julia died in 1914. He's in the middle of the front row. So, Eric's in Iowa, Eureka Fold in 1926. And 3 years went by while Eric worked, and his lifelong family visit pattern to Story County towns like Roland and McCallsburg or back to Kendall County, Illinois continued. But then he did something different. He decided to cross Eureka with Charlie Knox's cream stallion, Big Buck. That's my grandfather, and that's horse number 5 on the registry, known on the registry as Knox First. At home, that horse on the farm was called Big Buck. And this is why Eric did that. Charles, or Charlie Knox, was from Jewel, in that his family farmed 80 acres a mile and a half east in section 35 on land they purchased back in 1877. And it's this little red farm right here. Though he was half Eric's age, at the time, Charlie, like Eric, decided to try for a cream full out of Yancey. And it was highly likely he did so, not only because, like everyone else, he'd heard Eric talk about possibilities of creating a new draft horse breed from old Granny's foals, but also because, like Eric, Charlie didn't want to miss the chance before Yancey might be gelded, like Nelson's Buck was. The main difference between the two men was that Charlie was a farmer renting land from his mother, who had life estate, and Charlie was looking for opportunity to build up equity for his own farm, because he knew he was not going to inherit the family farm. Cream horses might be his chance to get in on something new and make some money. Charlie took his Bay Grade Shire mare, a mile and a half north and a mile and a half east of John Yancey's stallion, where John and Jesse Lake and Yancey were farming the Luther Lake place at Lakin's Grove. And by now, I hope you all know that I mean he went from here to here. And each of these little squares is a square mile. It's all a neighborhood thing. Where Eric ended up with the filly Eureka in 1926, Charlie ended up with the colt Big Buck in 1926. The ACDHA later said that Eureka was owned by Eric Christian and the other colt sired by Yancey was a horse perfect in both color and type, attaining the weight of around 1,800 pounds. I've written elsewhere about the creams my grandfather raised between 1925 and 1945. Where Charlie returns to the Eric Christian story is that he surprised everybody by crossing his cream stallion, Big Buck, with the two working draft mares he farmed with in 1928. And each foal in 1929 was a cream. It's shown here. You know about old Granny, you know about Nelson's Buck, you know about Yancey. Here's Eureka being foaled, here's Big Buck, same year. And Grandpa, when that horse turns, this horse turns two, crossed him with Floaty and Bonnie, and all this was the result. Nobody knew he did that, and nobody thought that those two horses would be creams necessarily. But they were, and it was exciting, because it proved that this horse was a good cream stallion. And when that happened, Dr. Christian approached Charlie and said, let's cross these two horses out of Yancey and get this thing going. So, I skipped ahead. Eric immediately made arrangements in 1929 with Charlie to fix the genes by crossing Eureka number 4 out of Yancey number 3 with Charlie's Big Buck number 5 out of Yancey number 3. So where Eric had been a catalyst in 25 for Charlie's decision to get a cream foal, Charlie was the catalyst for Eric's decision in 29 to cross Eureka and Big Buck. And in 1930, Eric's cream colt Dude number 7 was the result. As an aside here, after those two cream foals arrived in 1929 for my grandfather, and once Dude arrived in 1930, my grandfather ended up for the first time with clients. He had three clients. And their foals in 1931, because it happened right away, their foals were Pet, Tarzan, and Silver Lace here. And these foals, Pet and Tarzan, became the foundation of C.T. Ryerson's successful breeding program, which he began in 1933. And they were the foundation for G.A. Lenning's famous stallion, Silver Lace, number 9. From whom about a third of all creams are descended today. And C.T. then purchased many of the fillies sired by Silver Lace that were folded back into C.T.'s breeding program. So all of this resulted from this decision here. But that all happened after Dune Fold in 1930. Eric couldn't have been luckier. With the Cream Mare Riga in 26 and the Cream Stallion Duty in 30, he was set for a breeding program. He could proceed with developing the new breed extensively. You can look at this lineage chart today and see why. Why later in 1948, they included both Eric and Charles Knox in the list of pioneer breeders of the American cream draft horse. Because of Eric's vision and decisions resulting in Eureka and Duke specifically, you can see there were eventually impressive results with Eureka and Dune's descendants in the early days of developing the breed. Everything in blue is what resulted from Eric's decisions. Before he passed away in December of 1932, however, Eric's health changed. And the changes can be seen in Christian family reunion photos as early as 1930, the year Dune arrived. This is a reunion photo showing changes in Eric's health. At least I think they're changes in his health. This is Eric at that same reunion standing with his remaining brothers. When you look at close-ups with today's digital technology, you can see that he wasn't feeling well. The ACDHA said in 1948 that sometime before his death, when Eric could no longer care for his horses, he looked for a buyer and settled on Sam Tweet of McCallsburg in Story County. They didn't know the date of the sale then, and I don't know it now. But I did learn that Sam happened to be more than a cream horse buyer. Sam Tweet was a farmer, a banker, and was Eric's shirt-tail relative by marriage. Sam's first wife was Eric's cousin Alice Christian, the daughter of Eric's uncle John, one of those early Illinois immigrants in Eric's family that historian Arlen Tweet documented, who left Lisbon Township and was an earliest settler in Story County in central Iowa. Alice Christian had married Sam Tweet in 1890, and after Alice died in 1901, Sam remarried in 1903 and was a very successful farmer who had a lot of land and a lot of draft horses when he purchased Eureka and Dune from Eric sometime after Dune Fold in 1930, but before Eric Christian's death in 1932. Barbara, who's here today, talked with me on the phone, and her husband is Sam's is here today, Steve, and he is Sam's grandson. And my notes, this isn't a direct quote, but my notes said, Barbara told me in this photo, Sam is the one who only ever farmed with horses and raised his beloved draft horses, walking behind his oldest son, Allison, born in 1906, is far right, and if Allison's about 14 in this photo, then yes, this photo might be from about 1920. So even though I really, really hope that second white horse there in the row was, Eureka, Dude, picture's too early, and it's not. Sam Tweet and his brother Joe, even more so, furthered the Eureka Dude line after 1932, and that's what you see on this diagram here. They're involved with a lot of this work. So Eric spent the winter months of October, November, and December 1932 in the Hamilton County home near Webster City. In 1932, people could check themselves in and out of this facility and be cared for. It was not unusual for elderly citizens to do so, especially during the winter months for care and meals and sociability. I'll say that again. In 1932, people could check themselves in and out of this facility and be cared for. It was not unusual for elderly citizens to do so, especially during the winter months for care, meals, and sociability. And Eric died there, December 31st at 12:15 a.m. of acute cardiac dilatations, date of onset unknown. The death certificate also said, a contributory cause of importance not related to the principal cause of death was senility. So I'd like to close by offering each of you a copy of Eric's obituary.
Did you pass them along? Just pass them.
Just pass them along.
I'm not going to read the obituary because those, you know, we've all been sitting here for a while.
Eric's expertise and his opinions and advice, his belief in old Granny and her descendants as a new breed, the fact that he told everybody what he believed, the fact that he took action at the end of his life to begin developing the breed himself, all were essential. They're an essential part of the early days of this new breed. The cream horse showed up on Lyon Township farms from 1911 on. But Dr. Eric Christian, dual veterinarian and visionary in the early development of this horse, is the town of Jewell's claim to fame in the cream draft horse world. And I'm here today to encourage your appreciation of the crucial role that he played. When he died more than 90 years ago, Eric was right. Pat Lakin's mares, good-looking foals, were unusual. Old Granny and her babies were something unique. And they actually were a whole new draft horse breed developed in Iowa and the only draft horse native to the United States. I'll close now and ask if there are any questions.